Welcome back. 3:48, 7:30 a.m., 102.9 FM, WTNT. Andy Parks live from the Washington Times. And Charles Hurt writes the nuclear option column in the Washington Times. And today's column is entitled "A Unifying Day Until the Inaugural Speech Began." Charlie's on the line now. Hi, Charlie.
Hey, Andy. How you doing?
I'm doing just fine. Man, you were right on target with that. Everything was going just fine until, good old what's-his-name took to the microphone.
Yeah, you know, I live right on that straight shot from the old RFK Stadium and the Capitol. And so my wife and I were sitting on the front porch that morning watching literally thousands of people come streaming past, and there were little children and old people, and they were ebullient, they were thrilled, it was a wonderful spectacle to see, and they were so happy, they were quick with the wave, and it was one of those really nice moments where you stop and you say, all this political nonsense, it doesn't matter. Here are all these great, wonderful people, fine Americans coming down, to do their civic duty and go and celebrate what is a remarkable, unique government transfer ceremony, and it really was a very warm and unifying sort of thing. And then we had to listen to the guy speak.
his speech, honestly, in my mind, was a campaign speech on steroids. I mean, more on climate change, gay rights stuff, immigration reform, everyone doing their fair share. I mean, it really did. It sounded like a stump speech to me. But, the left is screaming, oh, it was one of the greatest things to come down the road in 50 years.
Yeah, well, if you listen to what all those people that are hailing it as this great speech and everything, whatever, if you listen to them, they could have made that statement before they even heard the speech, because what they're saying has absolutely nothing to do with what was actually in the speech. I mean, the guy basically told us that the Constitution, that the Declaration of Independence was flawed. Why is it that he always talks about race and he always talks about slavery? Nobody's belittling what serious issues those are, but the effort here is to move past all of that and to stop talking about it.
No, not with this guy.
Not with this guy. And he talked in the first sentence or the second sentence of the speech. He goes right into race. And it's just so divisive, and then the class warfare stuff, and then he goes on to talk about how his gun legislation is sort of the new civil rights movement for the era. Come on, man. And then not only is it offensive and divisive, but it's also just thoughtless and dumb, and it's not even interesting. Be a liberal, but be like a fresh, interesting liberal that's actually like thought about stuff. I just get the impression that he doesn't really think about stuff, and he doesn't think deeply about it, and he just kind of throws some of these words together, and then he called on us to take part in some collective action. What does that mean?
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, but because that wasn't the first time he used that phrase, and I don't know exactly what he does mean by that.
I think, honestly, it reminds me of your buddy in college who's taken his first philosophy course, and he thinks he's a socialist or a Marxist or something, and so he likes to throw out the word collective. Every now and then, and he stayed up too late at night and had too much caffeine, and he's making stupid talk, and that's what it reminded me of, because it makes no sense, and I don't know whether and then the examples he used of where collective action was taken, like building roads and so.
Yeah.
It's like, what are you talking about? You're making this stuff up as you go along, and it's not even smart. I thought you were supposed to be so. He was supposed to be so smart, but he's. I think we've all been sort of duped into thinking he's this really smart guy, when actually he's really not. But he has this awesome ability, God-given ability, to reach a lot of people in a powerful way. And my goodness, if he just used it for good or something that wasn't nonsensical, it would be extraordinary what he could get done.
You know, it's interesting. I want to go back to the Constitution for a minute because, you know, here's a guy who evidently, and I'm not really sure of this 100%, he claims to have taught constitutional law, and I guess there, you know, he was on the payroll, but I question what he was teaching, because most of the people that I know that are constitutional lawyers or constitutional law scholars, they respect the document and they respect every word in the document. And yet this is a guy who is taking us back to the liberal, idea that the Constitution is a living, breathing document and it's there for us to change. It's there for us to interpret in a different fashion. And that goes against everything I've ever heard from someone who actually taught constitutional law.
Yeah, and this notion that, you know, oh, yeah, Jefferson, he was an okay guy. You know, he was sort of smart, but, you know, he's not Barack Obama. And so Barack Obama has to take what this guy wrote, one of the most enduring, greatest documents ever, you know, by man, you know, written by man, and he's going to, like, improve upon it. And just the arrogance of it, you know, when you look back at the, you know, probably the most famous second inaugural address in history from Abraham Lincoln, you know, it was, and all of, you know, the Gettysburg Address, those addresses were just infused with humility.
Yeah.
And even with the things that Abraham Lincoln was grappling with and dealing with, you know, he would apologize and say that, you know, of course no one's going to remember what I have to say here and things like that. And of course, you know, of course all of it is remembered and memorized, and also memorized because it's about 1/8 the length of the speeches that this cat gives us. But they go down into history because they were so brilliant and so, you know, so everlasting, but not this stuff. This stuff is just,
you know,
political games.
Yeah, I had to laugh because I think it was Stephen Dinan in one of his stories said that, you know, Obama took 226 years and crammed it into 18 minutes.
Yeah, he really did.
And it changed.
You're just sitting there and you're like, wait, is this guy really rewriting all of this stuff?
Yeah.
Wow.
Well, and, you know, and getting back to the racial element, I find it disturbing, and I have for the past 4 years, that, you know, here you have a guy who, you know, despite what people say, he's not really, you know, the first African American president. He is biracial. His mother was whiter than the driven snow.
Yep.
His father was black. All right. The guy stood for the symbol of bringing people together, you know, and he has done nothing of the sort. He has divided this country racially. I mean, I would not have bet on this in 2008 when he was elected. When in November of 2008, when he won the election, I thought there could be one positive, perhaps more, by having him as the president. And the one that stood out was the ability to finally bring people together. And he's done just the opposite.
And that was exactly what was unavoidable, watching, you know, literally tens of thousands of people walk, you know, streaming down the street in front of our house that morning. Was, you know, 99% of the people walking down the street were black. And I totally, and I disagree with their political choice in this particular case, but I totally get it. And, you know, that there's that part of, you know, anyone who appreciates the arc of history and sort of, you know, understands that there was a horrible injustice done to generations and generations of blacks in this country, it's a thrilling thing. And it's the one thing I've always loved about this guy is that he represents, you know, the hope that we have gotten much better. We've become a much more, much better country and a much purer country because we have put all that stuff behind us. And yet, of course, those people walking down the street, they're patriotic, they're carrying flags, they love their country, so maybe it's the first time or something like that they felt this proud of their country. But dang it, they feel country, they're proud of their country, and they realize that there's something, you know, good happens here. And for them to then have to go out and then just trotted through the whole thing all over again, it just sort of reverses the good that was done. And it all kind of makes me wonder if part of President Obama's problem is that, you know, when you look back at his family's history, he's not been a particular part of, You know, slavery was never a part of his background.
No,
his
no.
father came from Africa.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't. None of his forebears were slaves. He doesn't know. Nobody living today really knows what all that was about, or what they don't know what it was like because they weren't alive back then. But people that black Americans or white Southerners, they do know that they do have at least some semblance of what that stuff is all about. And yet this guy is claims to be some sort of expert on this, who's going to grant forgiveness or not in this case.
Yeah.
Actually drag it up every time he gets the opportunity.
All right. Well, folks, if you haven't read it, check it out. It's in today's Washington Times, A Unifying Day Until the Inaugural Speech Began. It's by Charles Hurt. Charlie, great to talk to you again. We'll do it next week. Thanks.
Thanks, Andy.
Take care. It is 3:58, 7:30 a.m., 102.9 FM, WTNT.